making whoopee. 91.7 FM WMWM Salem, a broadcast service of Salem State University. The classic Making Whoopee, done there by a guy from Pittsburgh named Ernie Hawkins. The CD is called Whinin' Boy. Before that, Damon Fowler, new from him. He has a new CD out called Devil Got His Way, and that one was 28 degrees. It's a little warmer than that, actually. Also, local music from the Dirty Mac Blues Band. That one was called Lost Another Man from their album Victory Bar, and they're playing somewhere around here. I got to look at the, it's here. Well, I mentioned during the concert report. Here it is. They're playing on the 12th. Saturday the 12th at the Gulu Gulu in Salem. That was the Dirty Mac Blues Band, and that's when they're playing. And also in there, Studebaker John's Maxwell Street Kings, a new CD on Delmark. We heard Son of the Seventh Son from that. And then a guy named Biscuit Miller, Black Eyed Peas and Cornbread. Very catchy tune. And if I can fade this up, we've got an interview with a radio expert named Donna Halper, and I'm going to push it up right now. Hello, Donna, are you there?
No, I'm not here at all. Are you there?
How you doing?
Can I thank you for what you're doing?
Oh,
because
really?
I'm very serious. There are a number of niche formats that you just don't hear on the radio anymore. You don't hear enough jazz. You don't hear enough blues. You don't even hear enough folk music anymore. In a homogenized world, it's so nice to hear people doing what they love and keeping the music playing. So thank you for that.
Oh, you're very welcome. We're glad to still be doing it. I realize there's a station a little to the left of us that decided to put more news on and get rid of their folk and blues shows. The one that's, you know, the public TV people, their sister station. You know the one I mean?
Don't get me started.
Yeah.
Don't even get me started.
But thankfully, we're still around. In fact, if I can pat myself on the back here, my 30th anniversary.
Doing this for a while, yeah. Muzzle tough.
Yeah. My first show was March 12 of 1981. And so we're coming up on the 30th anniversary. That means I'm beginning my fourth decade at this station. It's hard to believe.
And they haven't gotten rid of you yet.
No, they haven't, but I still serve a purpose.
But that's exactly my point. And you're making people happy. And that's what radio used to do. And that's to some degree what radio still does. And that's why I wrote my book. And that's where radio is. Because no medium can befriend the listener better than radio.
Yeah, it sure is. Now, I've got the book in front of me. The woman we're talking to is an expert in radio and a former DJ and consultant, all that kind of stuff. Her name is Donna Halper, Donna L. Halper. And I've got the book right here. It says Images of America, Boston Radio, 1920 to 2010. And there's a picture on the cover of a certain WMEX DJ. And I talked to you, I think it was on the holiday a couple weeks back, and I asked you, but I'm going to ask you again, why is Arnie Wool Ginsberg on the cover?
Well, first of all, it was a way to say thank you. In fact, the whole book is a way to say thank you. When I was a kid growing up, I wanted to be in radio, but back then they said girls couldn't be in radio. This was like we're talking the 50s, and the society was still really, really gendered, okay? And the reason that they gave us that girls couldn't be on the radio was because you had to have a big, deep voice. You know what I'm saying? And then I turned on the radio one day, and there was Arnie. And Arnie didn't have a big, deep voice. He had a voice like this. And yet he was having so much fun on the air. He made fun of himself. He made fun of his voice. He called himself old aching adenoids, old leather lungs. He was just enjoying himself on the radio. And I said to myself, wow. If he can do it, I can do it. And it was just something that stayed with me and inspired me. And many years later, I got the chance to finally meet him and, kind of bow before him. I mean, I've met a lot of celebrities in my years in the business, but this was different. This was personal. And I got a chance to thank him. And I said to him, you know, I'm thinking of writing a book about Boston radio, and if I ever do, you're going to be on the cover. And he didn't think much of it. It was, you know, kind of like, yeah, people say stuff. But when I got the chance to do this book for Arcadia, I asked them, can I have this particular cover image? And they were like, well, it's not what we normally have. And I said, well, it would really mean a lot to me. And I was able to get that picture from Arnie of him with the bells and the horns and the whistles. And that's how Arnie ended up on the cover. And it's my way of saying thank you to him for being himself, for not being ashamed of who he was, and for helping a little girl in Roslindale to believe that, well, gee, maybe someday I could be on the radio.
And back then, there weren't as many rock and roll stations or alternative stations. I mean, he was probably one of the only places to go to for the top 40 or things, you know?
Absolutely. There were a lot of stations doing kind of a perverse version of top 40 because top 40 as a format was kind of new. You had a guy by the name of Todd Storrs, and depending on which version you've heard, it's either him or Gordon McClendon, and one or the two of them, either Storrs or McClendon, supposedly invented the format in either, pick one, 1949 or 1954. It doesn't matter. The fact is, though, that by the mid-50s, there was this break between the music your parents listened to, which was mostly big band and middle of the road, and this new music called rock and roll. And there started to be very gradually more stations going on the air and playing it. WMEX was certainly one of the stations that played it, but it also kind of elevated the personality DJ to an art form. And a lot of other stations emulated that personality DJ thing. But on the other hand, in fairness, WVDA, WILD, there were a number of stations that, in fact, played rock and roll music. They didn't necessarily stay with it. And then there were some stations where there was a backlash and they wouldn't play it. But the fact remains that Arnie became the quintessential top 40 DJ in this town. But now, you may remember, there was a guy named Joe Smith.
I'm 49. I can't remember.
Right on the edge. Okay, right on the edge. Yeah. Joe Smith ultimately became the head of, I believe, Warner Brothers Records or something, but he got to start playing top 40 here in Boston. But nobody became identified with the format more than Arnie, and I'm sure we'll get people calling up that, yeah, but there was this guy and that was that guy. But Arnie was unique. He was one of a kind.
Yeah, and the odd thing about that was, you know, he'd be on playing top, you know, the top 40 music, but then all of a sudden Jerry Williams would show up to do talk.
And in those days, the FCC mandated that you had to have a certain amount of talk in public affairs. And nobody expected differently. It was just that's the way it was. If you wanted to keep your license, that's what you had to do. And as a result, all the stations, it wasn't just WMEX, WBZ had a program by a guy named Bob Kennedy, not Bobby Kennedy.
Yeah, different Bob Kennedy. He's in the book, I noticed.
He would joke about it. He'd say, I'm the other Bob Kennedy.
Yes.
And Bob Kennedy did a program called Contact. And so you'd have, you know, WBZ, which in those days was playing sort of a top, soft top 40, kind of chicken rock. And they'd suddenly stop down and have Contact, and then on would come Juicy Brucey Bradley and et cetera and et cetera. And no one expected differently.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a different time. I will say, though, back in line with what you were doing, one of the cool things that I got to investigate was who was the first African-American announcer on the radio. And I've done some more research on that. And in Boston, it was either Savvy Lewis or a guy named Eddie Petty. And that was his real name, Edward Petty, but he kind of jokingly called himself Eddie Petty. And they were both former blues and jazz musicians.
Ah, yes.
And both of them played in blues and jazz bands all over the United States, particularly in the Midwest. And then they would come back to Boston and announce their own stuff. And they ultimately became DJs from that in the late 1940s.
Well, our blues fans will remember Rufus Thomas was a disc jockey.
Absolutely.
His daughter Carla did G-Baby and everything like that.
Yep,
the world's oldest teenager, or whatever he was called there, Rufus Thomas. Also, B.B. King was a DJ.
Yep, absolutely. On WDIA in Memphis.
Yes.
And WDIA, the owners were white, but the format was black.
Yeah, I think they still have all blues on Saturday. I'm not sure. They used to.
Wouldn't surprise me in the least. But yeah, B.B. King was on there. There were a number of people that played blues and played jazz, and why not? The first black formatted station owned by an African-American wasn't until 1949, and that was Jesse Blayton at WERD in Atlanta, and they also played a lot of blues.
Yeah, I was going to say, here in Boston over the years, we've had some long-running shows. We sadly lost her about 6 or 7 years ago, but Mae Kramer of WGBH
was on
for at least a quarter century. Yes. And there's actually, I mentioned this on Facebook, there's an article on bostonblues.com, the Boston Blues Society. Holly Harris, who would fill in for May. They have a very nice article about her. She used to work for WMFO at Tufts, and she would fill in. She actually met May during jury duty, you know, she knew it from some of us, but then they met again on jury duty, and eventually she became a fill-in, and she wound up doing a blues show at WBOS, which, sad to say, got wiped out when they got rid of their format a few years ago. They used to do a Sunday night blues show. So we've had all sorts of different jazz. I was going to ask you a couple of questions. Some of the different jazz DJs, for example. Some of our listeners might remember people like Bill Marlowe. He was around for many years, wasn't he?
Yeah, and Bill Marlowe, when the station he was at changed to Top 40, because briefly everybody changed to Top 40, and he refused to play it. He said, I play M-U-S-I-C. I don't play N-O-I-S-E.
I read your book.
And that's a true story. That's a true story.
I never knew that until I read your book, by the way, that comment.
So yeah, that was like a real big deal to him, and he was just furious at having to play Top 40. On the other hand, some people embraced it. Some people said, hey, you know, there's some interesting stuff here. And not everybody made the accommodation, though.
Yeah.
So, which happens anytime music changes. You always get one group of people that are like, well, the old days were much better. There was a time when Frank Sinatra, you know, of course, was like the king of the Bobby Soxers. All the girls would scream about him the way kids today scream about Justin Bieber. And then years later, he reinvented himself and had some top 40 hits. So go figure.
Yeah, I was going to mention another name in the jazz world. I believe he did some jazz in the middle of the night, was Norm Nathan.
Absolutely.
I think HDH or different stations.
He was on HDH, absolutely was.
Yeah, he was doing that.
Yeah, and Sounds in the Night, yes.
Sounds in the Night.
I worked for a jazz station. I was on the air at WRVR in New York when it was a jazz station, and a lot of people were kind of surprised because they're, you come from rock and roll. Yeah, but my parents grew up listening to big band jazz, and they turned me on, God rest their souls, to an awful lot of good music. So it was kind of cool to be able to be at a station and to play some of that stuff and play some of the newer music. See, that's the point. It's all music.
Yeah,
and I think we get way too hung up on genres and, you don't come from the jazz world. Okay, but I'm here now, so.
Yeah, well, I mean, I used to be, an alternative rock DJ here, and then I started the blues show in 88, and I've kept it going, and certainly other blues shows are no longer on, like I mentioned GBH, and there were some other ones that got dropped as well, so we're keeping the tradition alive. I realize that people, you can get an all-blues station on satellite radio, you can get it on HD radio, but we need it on regular radio, and that's why we're here, because not everyone has one of those little HD things, and you know what I mean?
Like most people don't.
Yeah, most people don't. I have both, but...
But you know, there again, that's radio reinventing itself. I've got no problem with HD. I have no problem with niche formats.
Yeah.
I understand how the corporate stations want to make sure they're making a few bucks. They want to make sure that they are turning a profit. I totally understand that.
Yeah, exactly.
But I wish more stations would have some programming on the weekend that's just a little bit unique, just a little bit new and different. I mean, like, there are stations in town, which will remain nameless, that do jazz on Sunday morning, but it's all that smooth jazz.
That's true.
Sounds like elevator music.
Yeah, the Phoenix station used to have a show for years. I don't know if it's still on anymore. WFNX, I don't know if they still do their jazz show.
I would love to hear some real, honest-to-God jazz.
BU station used to have a lot. And GBH, well, they still have some, but I mean, pretty soon it's going to be gone, I think.
The MIT station, back when it first started out as WTBS, and then they sold the call letters, and it became WMBR, Memorial
Building Radio.
And they used to have a folk show, they had a jazz show, they had a scratchy oldies show, and why not?
Well, that's what we do on weekends ourselves. We have, we've got like doo-wop and country. We've got different shows. We have, like, we rotate them sometimes. Jazz, country, doo-wop. We have ethnic programming. We have local music, blues. We have all sorts of stuff on the weekends and sometimes during the week.
That's what radio is all about. Radio is a friend. Radio is an intimate medium that makes you feel like it is your friend.
Yeah.
And I don't know any other medium that does that.
And we know some people that have really put together some nice niche shows, like Barry Scott with Lost 45s. He really
is an old friend, and I go back like 25 years with Barry, and he found exactly what a lot of us that are radio programmers know, that there are certain songs that make people go, oh, wow, I haven't heard that in ages, and that's what you want. And so that whole Lost 45s thing is all about those songs that made people go, oh, my God, I remember where I was when I heard that, that sort of thing. Yeah. I mean, I understand playing the hits, but you also got to have some of those I haven't heard it in ages songs.
Yeah, and that's why those type of shows are great. You know, years ago, there were certain things that we wouldn't have expected to succeed. Who would have thought back in maybe the early 80s, late 70s, that we'd have all sports talk radio? And now we've got two huge stations in town that are doing quite well with it.
Well, Eddie Andelman, God bless him, tried to do that format in 1970. Guy Manella was calling all sports in the late 1960s.
Yep.
There were a number of people in a number of cities that played around with sports talk. The problem I have today, and you and I have talked about this with regard to politics, okay? The problem I have with talk radio today is it's gotten so polarized and so...
A lot of screaming, people talking over each other.
Somewhere in his grave, David Brudnoy is spinning. I mean,
yeah.
The poor guy is getting no rest because he was a conservative, but he was always courteous to the other side. One of his closest friends was Ted Kennedy.
Yeah.
They agreed on nothing.
Yeah. I think Dan Ray, who's in his slot now, I think tries to embrace that as well. He says, as long as you're reasonable, we'll talk about the issues and, you know, not get all heated. Getting back to sports for a minute.
A little bit more polarized, though, I think. A little bit,
I have to admit.
But it doesn't matter. The fact still remains. The courteousness is what matters. I love passionate talk.
Exactly, yes.
I love people, that whole thing. I don't know if you're familiar with it. There was a philosopher, a sociologist named Benedict Anderson, and he wrote a book called The Imagined Community. Now, he didn't apply it to radio, but a lot of us have. Radio makes you feel like you are part of an imagined community, like all the community of sports fans, the community of blues fans, and they all like to call up, and they all like to listen, and they all like to second-guess the DJ or second-guess the host, or in the case of sports, second-guess the manager.
Right.
And radio lets you do that, no other medium.
That's what's great about it. I'm just leafing through this book. Once again, it's called Boston Radio 1920 to 2010, and you've got features here on people. I mean, we were talking about sports. There's Ken Coleman, Ned Martin,
yes,
Kurt
yes.
Gowdy. You've
yes.
got the Andelman and his sons.
Absolutely.
You've got, and there's other people as well. Now, you were mentioning Brudnoy. There's Lavelle Diet. There's Dave Maynard. We've got the late, great Paul Sullivan. Steve Lavelli. There's Joe Castiglione.
Yep.
And there's and getting back to DJs, there is a picture of yourself from 1968 at what was then WNEU.
Yep. Hey, but you know what? WNEU got my career started. I'm very grateful for that. They weren't happy about it when I first came up there in 1964 to apply to be on the air, because I didn't know why there were no women on the air. I figured maybe they hadn't applied. So I show up, and I'm like, you know, I'm ready to do a show, you know, and they're like, you can't do a show. You're a girl.
Yeah, amazing.
I'm like, well, yeah, I suppose. And they said, we don't have girls on the air. I said, well, why not? And they said, well, they don't sound good. I said, well, how many have you had on the air? And they said, none. They don't sound good. I said, well, how do you know they don't sound good if you've never had any on the air? And I ended up embarking on a 4-year battle that finally culminated in 1968 with my becoming the first woman DJ in the history of Northeastern University.
Oh, great.
And my career kind of went from there.
Yeah, I was mentioning in the little thing about yourself, about you being in Cleveland. When you were in Cleveland, was it the Buzzard or something? Didn't you help to get Rush their start in radio, or at least aired on radio?
Not the talk show host, the
yeah,
rock
exactly,
band.
Yes.
Yes, I discovered the rock group Rush. They dedicated their first two albums to me. I'm in the new documentary about them 4 times. And if your listeners go on YouTube and, you know, just do a Google search and go Donna Halper, Hollywood Walk of Fame, they will see me on the Hollywood Walk of Fame last June, helping to give Rush their star. So, you know, we've been friends for 37 years, and they're just the nicest people ever. I mean, I've done a lot of favors for a lot of people, but Rush have kept in touch. They've always acknowledged what I did for their career, and, I mean, I feel so honored that we're still friends.
Yeah, it's great. It's great when you can get things started. I want to say that WRKO, I think, helped to make hits out of it. It was either... what was that Creedence song, the long one there, Born in the Bayou, or, no, there was, oh, Susie Q.
And I Heard It Through the Grapevine, which there were 4 versions. There was a long version, a short version, a long short, and a long long. And depending on what time of the day, see, I was the hit line operator there. Back then, they wouldn't let women do anything other than answer the phone. So I kind of helped the music director, even though I didn't get any credit for it. And I got to answer the phone, which was still kind of cool because I met an awful lot of people. And, yeah, they had four versions of it. The engineers used to do these just incredible edits of songs. And, there was this...
The other song I'm thinking of is Light My Fire by the Doors. That and Creedence Susie Q. I think RKO edited them down, and they wouldn't have wound up as hits anyway if they hadn't edited them.
Yeah. And this is the big problem, because in the mid-60s, okay, the FCC passed a ruling that said that AM and FM could no longer simulcast. In
right.
the old days...
Mm-hmm.
FM was considered to be like, well, who'll ever listen to that? So the AM stations that owned FM just simulcasted their FM. When the FM stations got told they had to have unique programming and they could no longer just have AM on FM, the FM stations went looking for different formats. And one of the formats they found was album rock. And the thing with album rock, which in those days was called progressive rock or underground rock, was it differentiated itself by playing the long versions of everything, where the Doors' Light My Fire was 2 minutes and 52 seconds on AM. On FM, you heard the whole thing. And that became like a positioning for FM. We don't talk over the songs.
Yes.
And we play the long versions.
And that, you know, we were talking, the show that was on just before me, we were talking about the old days of WBCN stations like that. And I was remembering different things, like, for example, BCN actually went on strike at one point because the new owner was taking them over, and they broadcast in exile from the BC station, WZBC, and they had a parade on the air and everything. But everyone decided and made a difference.
Absolutely. And you had Charles Lacoudera spoke out against Shell because he felt that, you know, Shell was
and all that.
Doing things in the third world that weren't very nice and pollution and yada, yada. Can you imagine somebody speaking out against a sponsor today?
No.
They'd be fired.
Yeah,
you know?
It's kind of funny. You were talking about different formats breaking off on FM, but some stations are actually, it's going backwards. You have some talk stations like down in Providence. There's simulcasting on FM, so now it's almost like back in the old days.
Oh, I know. Now things have come full circle.
Well, maybe because it's not as much interference if you're listening at work.
Absolutely.
But thank God for all the FM stations that did do this.
Bobby, I want to, first of all, I just want to thank you for taking time out of your busy day to let me talk a little bit about my book. I hope a lot of people will go out and buy it. It was a labor of love. Any self-respecting bookstore would have it. Publishers Arcadia Press. I hope that everyone buys at least 10 copies and possibly more. And the question I get the most commonly, and I will answer it real quick, and then I've got to go rock and roll and do some other stuff. But people are like, how come you didn't put this one in? Or how come you didn't put that one in? The problem with Arcadia Books, and it's not a problem. I mean, this is the format. This is how they do it. You get 127 pages. That's what you get. They're meant to be affordable books with a lot of information and a lot of great pictures. And honest to God, if I couldn't get a picture that was good enough quality, I couldn't use it. And a number of people, I tried desperately to get pictures from them. And all they had was like, you know, a little snapshot or a Polaroid or something. Remember Polaroids?
Yes.
And unfortunately, they just weren't of the quality that would get them in the book. It wasn't personal. So what I did instead was I mentioned them in the text. And there were quite a few people, like Max Ann at WBCN. I tried everything I knew to get a picture of her. I had five of my friends try to get pictures of her. Unfortunately, a lot of stations have just thrown stuff away.
Although I'd like to think that maybe WBZ is pretty good about keeping...
They are wonderful, and they helped me a lot. Peter Casey, God bless him, he was a big help. There were a number of people. I thank them all at the beginning of the book. There were a number of people who did hang on to stuff, plus I go to flea markets all over the country. I go everywhere I can possibly go to try to preserve the history of our profession. Radio matters. I'm going to keep doing my part to keep telling the story.
And I'll tell you, a station like ours, we could just be running stuff off a satellite or running stuff off the computer, but we have people who come down here and do shows and talk to the people off the air. We promote local bands. We talk about what's going on. We've had political candidates of both parties. The show that's on before me, we had Democrats and Republicans alike come down to talk to be interviewed. And we're serving the community. We're not some station that's all everything's all computerized and everything's off the satellite. No, we're live and local. And I tell you, I need to thank, because I've been here for 30 years, we really need to thank the people at this station and definitely Salem State University, no longer college, now a university, for keeping us on the air this long. And definitely our listeners we have to thank.
Absolutely. And that's why I wanted to get that out there. So
okay.
Anyway, thank you so much for your time.
And just before
I deeply appreciate it.
Before you go, once again, we'll tell people that it's called Images of America, Boston Radio, 1920 to 2010 by Donna Halper. And this interview, by the way, we will be podcasting this at various places. I'm going to put it up, but there'll be a link on radioinfo.com.
Oh, that'll make a number of my friends happy, because I have a friend in Africa. I'm helping his daughter go to school. I mean, she's such a little cutie. I'll do a little shout-out. Hi, Cindy.
Yay, hi.
No, she's adorable. She's wonderful.
And who would have thought that we'd be
in school, you know?
Who would have been Oh, yeah. What did you say? Sorry.
No, I was just, all I was saying was that, like, all over the world, there are kids that can hear this stuff, and God willing, maybe somebody will hear our voices and be inspired the way I was inspired here in Arne Ginsberg. That's what I keep hoping for.
And who would have thought that anyone around the world could listen in via the web, which is what we're doing right now, people, and we're streamcasting.
Well, thank you so much for podcasting it. And Bob, seriously, I'm very appreciative. I can't even thank you enough.
All right. Thanks very much, Donna Halper. And we're going into Etta James with Tell Mama. Thanks very much, Donna Halper. We'll talk to you later. Bye.